on the second floor of the Student Center. And if you want information on that, give a call to Steve Weiss for Huff UCSC, Students Against the Sleeping Ban, at 427-0270, 427-0270. And if you miss any of this information, you can give a call to the Huff line, 423-HUFF, 423-4833, and you get a long recorded message, which will allow you an opportunity to pick up on any phone numbers that you've missed. So we return now to Alibaba's cafe several days ago and the incident involving Alibaba and Linda LeMaster.
Well, what happened as I saw it was Ali here, there were some bags sitting on Ali's chair that were Linda's.
Which Ali, I'd like to look at and see if he broke the glass things in it.
Gotcha. And apparently Ali wanted them moved and asked Linda to move it, and Linda was saying she...
And I said I would. Linda. I had one gulp left of soda.
Right.
And he found that offensive for some reason.
That's Linda's perspective.
So she did buy something from him?
I don't know if she bought something from him or was finishing her own soda. But I know that what happened was Ali became very irate with her and accused her of hitting him, which he did not do. He started shouting in a loud voice, "I will not allow a woman to hit me." And frankly,
and
I didn't see Linda hit him, and I don't think that she did. So I think he was making a big scene for public consumption. But who knows? Maybe not. Ali can give you a different perspective. He was here.
What happened?
Well, I want to catch this arrest. You know, I came over, Ali, to stop it, and you got into the scene with her. It's not my fault that you got into that with her.
You know. Yeah.
But you can throw two bags of groceries across the cement.
I'm telling you,
you did not.
Please pick up.
You were not polite, and you were dangerous.
In any case, there's a dispute about the facts here.
Hey. Even that, this is not it.
Sounds like you're citing the wrong person, officer.
Thank you for your advice, ma'am. I appreciate it.
We'll see if he acts on it.
Why is it that always that when these cross complaints happen, that police take the complaint Ali has against somebody, but they don't take the complaint that somebody has against Ali? Why is it that that's kind of a statistical oddity, Ali?
So we have two complaints here, one from Ali and one from Linda. But will both be taken, or will only one be taken? We'll see. Are police officers simply private security guards for businesses downtown? Check out this situation and find out. More public spaces confiscated for the benefit of one cafe, Alibaba. Ali is citing a woman for assault, Linda LeMaster.
For what?
Well, she didn't get her bags off his chair quickly enough. Oh. That's my analysis. Ali has a history of complaints against the citizens in the area. Yet this is the man who gets city council backing and funding to expand his business and close off a private area. This man here.
Oh, that guy right there?
Yes. Well, and there seems to be a dispute about the facts. Well, wait a minute. What was the whole story? Tell us the rest of the story.
She threw the soda at him, didn't she? That's what you said.
No, I didn't see that.
You guys are so uppity, man. Ugh.
So we have a woman making up...
There's a downtown merchant having the police do what she wants. Banish the poor. Arrest people
So Eco Goods has another dispute here. So, Becky, take it. It's okay. She has a right to her perspective, but obviously she didn't see what happened. That was the point, so.
She said she did. What,
I know.
Did she lie?
Maybe she thinks she did, but she didn't see it. Who knows?
I had a...
You didn't see it. You just arrived, right?
I just got here. I don't.
Right.
But I...
You know,
I'm not a liar, but
I really don't think your credibility is very good, Ali. I've heard so many cases where people have said that you've treated them poorly or actually been violent with them, and when you call a cop, it's always, you're always the victim. Somehow that happens a lot, Ali. And I just saw, you know, it just happened right now.
So, meantime, I would like to set up the table and encourage...
You're very aggressive.
Get some boycott going.
I do not
going.
Want to talk to you.
So, he has a right not to talk to you. We all have a right not
Thank
to talk
you,
to
Robert.
Each other. You're welcome.
I don't want to talk to you either.
I'm not talking to you either. Boycott Alibaba's Cafe and Sushi Now.
Assaulting women!
And as it happened, several days later on hearing more details of what went on and hearing conversations between Officer Brandt and Linda LeMaster, it turned out that this is not a complaint that Alibaba filed for assault, but rather for battery, which is unlawful touching. Assault is putting someone in fear of their safety. It is true, however, that Officer Brandt declined to take a complaint and talked Linda out of a complaint on the second occasion by apparently, he persuaded her that a citizen's arrest had some special force, didn't explain to her that a citizen's arrest simply means signing a form, which in essence indicates the seriousness that you want to have a matter pursued by the district attorney. So as of a day or two ago when I went with Linda to the police station, the citizen's arrest had not been made, and Brandt had essentially done the same thing he had done a week before with activist John Teal King and discouraging and then refusing to take a complaint by the account of John Teal King. The other thing is that apparently Linda acknowledged that she had thrown a soda can at the chest of Alibaba, an empty soda can. She was intending to discard it. She looked around and it ended up hitting him in the chest. Didn't look like it damaged him in any way. But, you know, it was the store owner, apparently, of Eco Goods, or the worker there, was accurate in saying that that was what she had heard Linda LeMaster say at the time. And that's what the account that was given. Again, this was precipitated by Ali's tossing her groceries on the ground. And, again, this territorial quality with respect to space, which really is the nub of the controversy downtown, the exclusion of the public from space, the demand that everything be ruled by this commercial mercantile ethic and the wishes and whims and business priorities of the business owners, or at least in this case, particularly Ali. I've been observing Ali for years and gotten numerous complaints about him from street musicians, homeless people, activists, as to how he's had people cited for chalking on the sidewalk, cited for playing music, threatened to be cited recently for playing a drum, cited for trying to file a complaint against him for violence. This was the case of Lee Myers, who's going to court for a charge of petty vandalism because he pushed a chair of Ali's back into in front of an area where it was blocking the sidewalk in an area kind of near the crosswalk. He pushed one of the white chairs back with his foot into the back to the table where it was. And Ali came out and began denouncing him, and apparently in a fashion which Lee found threatening. And then when Lee called the police and tried to complain about assaultive behavior by Ali, Ali complained that there was a case of petty vandalism, although he claimed that there was a hairline crack on the chair that Lee had created, although Lee said that the crack had dirt in it, it was nothing he'd caused, and it was simply another example of Ali's using the police against the poorer people around him, which he's quite used to doing, apparently, at least in the kinds of reports I'm getting. And again, we're talking about just one merchant downtown who's in a public green kiosk,
in front of New Leaf Market area. And, you know, why all this focus on this situation? Well, because it's an example of how police and merchants are dealing with poor people, homeless people, young people, and the citizenry generally, and the kind of differential behavior that goes on.
Blossoms still grow from each tree. When the leaves are still green in December, it's then that our land will be free. I wander the hills and valleys, and still through my sorrow I see a land that has never known freedom, and only her rivers run free. I cry for the death of her man. Those men would rather have died than to live in the cold chains of bondage. To bring back their rights were denied. Oh, where are you now that we need you? What burns where the flame used to be? Are you gone like the snow of last winter? And will only our rivers run free? Life, but we're crying. How mellow the wine, but we're dry. How fragrant the rose, but it's dying. How gentle the wind, but it sighs. What good is in youth when it's aging? What joy is in eyes that can't see? When there's sorrow and sunshine and flowers, and still only our rivers run free.
Your name, sir?
Andy Joint.
Andy, you're a resident of how many years?
21 years.
And when you have a problem with somebody who's, say, panhandling, you let them know about it?
Yes.
But you, what do you feel about this fencing off of what I now call yuppie planter?
I disagree with it. And the reason being is you can't alienate a person by how they look. And if there are people there that have a problem, it should be dealt with at that time, you know? That's my opinion.
Thank you, Andy.
Uh-huh.
So we're talking to
Christina Hall.
Christina, you work as a bartender here at the
Garage Sports Bar.
And it's about 6:40 on February 24th, Sunday evening. Looks kind of like a light crowd. And kind of a complicated bathroom situation. You have a bathroom for your employees and for women inside the actual bar area behind the counter. Then you have a bathroom that, I guess, the city makes you pay for, but you lease from the city, that is, for male customers. And then there's the third bathroom, which is the public bathroom, but that closes at 6. It's supposed to be open, is that to the general public, is that accurate?
Yeah, that's, to the best of my knowledge, that's exactly how it's going now.
But there have been some problems. What kind of problems have you encountered?
Just generally the public restroom, even during the day, sometimes is closed because it's been ransacked, broken, trashed, and other things of that nature. And then people, of course, come in and ask to use our restroom all day long, and we have to pay for any damage in our restroom that the city is leasing to us out of our pocket. So it's really like a catch-22, you know. We feel bad. We want to let people use our restroom, But if they break something, it comes out of our pocket, and we've been open less than a year, so we're trying to get ahead, so.
How, if you were to add up, I don't know, maybe you don't know, what kind of damages in the last year has your restroom suffered? I mean, any estimates per month of the cost to keep the restroom open?
I know 1 month the sink was broken off. I don't know how much that cost to replace. I know our plumber charges $60 to $90 an hour or something like that. Constantly people cut with scissors or some other object. The cord that tells the urinal when to flush. So that like is probably every other day that's a problem. So luckily we have people in here that are contractors and other people that have tools and know how to fix it, and they'll go out there and do it for us. So we don't have to call a plumber every other day. The toilet was ripped out at one point. All the toilet paper rolls have been ripped out of the wall. Everything's fallen. People have ripped the mirrors off the wall, ripped the soap thing off the wall. It's just like one thing after another.
Now, are you a person who's worked in other bars as well or just this bar?
No, just this bar.
And we're listening to an interview with the bartender in a sports bar at the corner of Soquel and Front Streets, which is also kind of in the corner of the new parking garage, in which the restrooms are closed from 6 o'clock on. And I've been informed that Borders now having closed its restrooms even to customers, although they kept them open to everyone for about the first, well, year of their being here, that there was now, you could get a key to the restroom by going into this bar. And when I reached this bar, I saw a sign on the door which said, call the city council if you have any complaints, no public restroom. And when I went up to the parking payment window, which is the window where you go to pay for your auto when you park in this garage, city run and presumably financed by the city, and I should say funding to the city from all our parking fees. When I asked about the restroom and whether it was open and what was going on, he simply handed me a little piece of paper with the number of the city council on it. It was kind of funny. He said he didn't know anything else, so he just talked to the city council about any of these issues. So again, we'll hear some more of this interview with the bartender at the sports bar on the corner of Front and Soquel.
I've never had, you know, a long, continuous experience in bars, but there's a kind of a feeling I have that when you're dealing with alcohol, you get more problems than, let's say, with coffee. I mean, is that accurate?
Yeah, I would say so. And you have to probably use the restroom more often than when you do with coffee.
Particularly if you're a big beer drinker.
Yeah, right.
In Santa Barbara, they have a situation where the city pays private cafes to open them up to the public and then pays for the damages and does repairs. You said your boss is a little bit pissed at the city, what is his concern? What would he like to see happen, and what would you like to see happen?
Well,
and I realize you're not speaking for him, just giving me your impression.
Yeah, I don't want to speak for Fred, but he asked for two bathrooms to be built inside this bar, and they would not do it. For some reason, I do not know. So, and we also have to pay for the tokens. They're 2 cents a piece, I believe. So every single time we hand out a token, it's costing him 2 cents. So that's another reason why we don't want to just hand our toke out to anybody, because we're paying for it out of our pocket as well. So
tokens don't come back to you, or?
No. Once you put them in the slot, they generally, you know, they're inside the door, and we have a key to get them out. But a lot of the times people forget they have a token, they wait outside, someone's coming out, they go in. We generally recover probably 10% of our tokens per week. So that's a lot of money for just that. But I think that's a great idea. If the city's willing to pay for our damages, I don't think Fred would have a problem with letting people use our restroom after 6. But at that point,
you're open until 2 a.m.?
Yeah, it's also pretty busy in here at night. Some nights it's real busy. And so the doorman would have an extra responsibility of going and checking the bathroom more often, because there'd be more traffic in the bathroom, especially people who aren't in our bar. We can't keep an eye on for things like drugs and other things that we need to. We generally have them check the bathroom every 15 minutes for things like that, because we can get in really big trouble, you know. So we would really have no liability as far as like keeping an eye on people that just come in off the street and want to use the bathroom. So that might be one thing he would have a problem with, but.
No. For women, it's often a more difficult situation in terms of the bathroom than for men. Men can just walk in, use a bathroom, they want to urinate and leave. Do you find lots of long lines here for women trying to use a bathroom?
No, actually, this is because I used to go down to other bars more often. Now that I work in one, I don't hang out in one so much. But there's really unpleasant lines at a lot of the bars in this town, and this is one that generally isn't, because I think part of it's because we're a sports bar, so not a lot of women come in. But generally, no, I haven't noticed, like, just since it's, you know, one occupancy, I haven't noticed big lines. And there also is a public women's bathroom we have a key for also. So if we were really busy and people did need to use that, we could open that with the key as well. So
this is one of the two bathrooms outside, or a third bathroom outside?
No, since we have the men's that has a token, there's also a women's with tokens as well. So there's actually two bathrooms out there that the city built that we can use. But we have women just use generally the one inside here.
And those two are distinguished from the third bathroom that's open to the public during the day?
Right, they're locked up.
Actually, two more, actually. So there's actually four bathrooms out there and one inside here that you use for your employees.
Right.
And then the question is, why are people pissing on the walls? Because they can't get into the bathrooms, is the question. Because I've seen people cited or arrested for pissing when they can't get into the bathroom. And, of course, Borders has closed its bathrooms. What impact has that had, the closing of the Borders bathroom?
I'm not sure if it's had such a big impact, because we have a sign out on our door telling people, don't even ask. So I'm sure that, you know, probably 50% of the people see that and they go, all right, fine, I'll find something better to do, which might be piss on the wall. But I know that there's also, we've had problems with the security here in this parking structure. And we kind of miss them in a way, because they also would keep people out of that public restroom from trashing it, so it was open more often. People were going in there, making sure people weren't camping out in there and other things like that. That's why they would generally lock it, is if they saw people camping out in there or anything was broken. So, and we haven't had any security out here anymore. I think a lot of those people have been fired since they were kind of sticking their nose in our business and getting in trouble. They're not paid to be doormen or to watch our bar. They're paid to check security in the vehicles up in this parking structure. A lot of them were getting broken into while they were on shift. So I mean, that's one angle that the city can do, is have an attendant, like a public bathroom attendant, you know. That would cut it down.
In Los Angeles, or actually San Diego, there homeless people did a kind of a long fast to get them to open up a 24-hour bathroom, which had an attendant all the time, which would let people in and out of the bathroom. Of course, San Diego is a much larger city, but
right.
I don't see why Santa Cruz can't have similar bathrooms. They were supposed to 2 or 3 years ago. Your name again is?
Christina Hall.
And Christina, to this, I don't want to keep you from your customers or whatever else you need to do.
No, I just, like, as well as you, I'm sure, I hope that something is resolved in this issue, because it's a pain for us as much as it is for, you know, tourists, homeless people, public people that just want to use the restroom, you know. And there are a lot of people downtown after 6 p.m., and there's not a lot of places to use. So, and, you know, I wish we could open. And if the city would be willing to take care of our damages, that might be something that we could do in the future, hopefully. So.
Thank you very much.
Yeah, no problem.
Time you switch on the TV, you can bet your old boots that at some point you'll see a high-ranking copper or Tory MP calling on all who are British and free to stand up and defend law and order. It's illegal to rip off a payroll, it's illegal to hold up a train, but it's legal to rip off a million or two that comes from the labor that other folk do. To plunder the many on behalf of the few is a thing that is perfectly legal. It's illegal to kill off a landlord or to trespass upon his estate,
But to charge a high rent for a slum is okay. To condemn two adults and three children to stay in a hovel that's rotten with damp and decay is a thing that is perfectly legal. If your job turns you into a zombie, it's legal to feel some despair. But don't be aggressive, that is, if you're smart, and for Christ's sake, don't upset the old apple cart. Remember, the boss has your interests at heart, and it grieves him to see you unhappy. If you fashion a bomb in the kitchen, you're guilty of breaking the law. But a bloody great nuclear plant is okay, though plutonium processing hastens the day when this tight little isle may be blasted away. Nonetheless, it is perfectly legal. It's illegal if you are a gypsy to camp by the side of the road. But it's proper and right for the rich and the great to live in a mansion and own an estate that was got from the people by pillage and rape. That's what they call a tradition. It's illegal to carve up your missus
or put poison in your man's tea.
But poison the rivers, the seas and the skies, and poison the mind of the nation with lies. If it's done in the interests of free enterprise, then it's proper and perfectly legal. It's legal to join a trade union, and to picket is one of your rights. But don't be offensive when scabs cross the line. Be nice to the coppers and keep this in mind. To picket effectively, that is a crime. Worse than if you had murdered your mother. It's legal to sing on the telly, but they make bloody sure that you don't. If you sing about racists and fascists and creeps and thieves in high places who live off the weak and those who are selling us right up the creek, the twisters, the takers, the con men, the fakers, the whole bloody gang of exploiters.
Okay, well, it's about 4:15. We're in front of the Pacific Cookie Company. Man is playing a guitar. And man with a River Street sign display. You have a River Street sign display. You have a car there leaned against, and a police officer just double parked here and gave you a ticket. And I believe this is dated February 26th or February 25th. It was either Tuesday or Monday that this was recorded.
Excuse me, I was reaching for a quarter, and honest to God, truth, I was looking for the parking meter at the very moment. This officer in a uniform came up, and his name is Pawlak. I'd like to say that again.
P-S-O.
P-A-W-L-A, I can't... He is really a young kid who is wearing a police officer's uniform.
It's red up there.
And what he did was against the, basically against the policy of the parking department. When you are, like, feeding your meter, They never give you a ticket.
Right.
No, and that's their policy.
Right.
I'm sure this ticket will be dismissed, but I told Mr. Pawlak that he hexed himself here because in front of all these people, he acted in a very unprofessional manner, and I did not even take the ticket out of his hand. I had him put it on the car, and there he goes.
Did you sign it? No, it's a parking ticket.
It's a parking ticket.
You know, it's interesting. This is a place, when you're a phone booth right across the street from Sushi Now, where young people are gathering who've been driven away from the planter over there, and I think they regard you as a, should we say, unacceptable magnet for young people, because you do have a display here with, you know, many, many pictures of your different sense about how the River Street sign could be, should we say, repainted and so saved, right?
You know, Mr. Norris, I think that this is just another extension of police hatred, which is mirroring the public hatred that the public has for this sign. After 9/11, as you well know, we all had like a numbness to hatred. There was a no hate zone all around us, and we suddenly had to like find something convenient to hate. The public, of course, attacked the sign because it's ugly. It didn't see the solution because it wanted to attack the sign and hate the sign. People got together and hated the sign, but all it needs is a paint job. Now, if the police department is attacking my display to save the River Street sign, then you can make a note of that right now.
My concern is that I think they're attacking you because you're in an area where there are a lot of young people, some guitars, some backpacks. I'd say we have a group of about 15 people here. And I think that, you know, although I must admit I'm pleased to see that they aren't dispersing this group, as they shouldn't be, because there's no law against what they're doing, I think that they want to get them gone. And I think that they went after you because you happen to be here among these groups.
Well, you know, Mr. Norris, they're really actually picking on the wrong person. You know, I'm a successful businessman. I told that police officer I'm a millionaire, you know, and that, you know, I put him on my list, basically. You know, there he goes.
Well, Officer Pollack is notorious. He went after Zoe Einbinder for sitting on the on a planter up there with a bunch of jewelry, hemp jewelry, which she laid out, gave her 3 citations for that at the same time.
Are you really kidding
me?
No, I mean, that is a stretch of imagination.
That's the truth. I saw the 3 tickets.
Now,
all in the same time for essentially, I mean, different things, sitting on the planter, displaying jewelry.
Okay. Here's the issue. The police can indiscriminately write illegal tickets for infractions that are really hard to beat in court, and you have to go in front of a traffic judge who's sometimes very prejudiced.
Get rid of him, man. Disqualify Mulligan, everybody.
And, you know, even if you get this citation beat in court, you're still dealing with the hassle of going through the process, and that is what they wish to inflict as an inconvenience upon you, and that is very un-American.
I think it's wrong. I think you should get tickets for things that deserve tickets, not for things that don't.
And let me go further to state that this kind of action by rogue police officers in the Santa Cruz Police Department generally gives a bad color to the police department in general, and we shouldn't allow that, you know, this kind of thing to continue, and that we should bring these officers to justice. If not in the courts, we should bring them to justice in the press.
Dig it. And that's what I'm out here for.
Thank you.
You're welcome. And you're tuned to Free Radio Santa Cruz, 96.3 FM. This is a recorded edition on February 28th, 2002. I'm gone down south, but you can leave a message for me at 423-HUFF, 423-4833, and I'll be back for my regular show on Sunday from 10 to 1:30 with a special interview with Mel Mason, former Black Panther, former Seaside City Council member, and current activist who's concerned with community control of violent police officers and is taking action in that direction. Tune in from 10 to 11 or 10:15 to 11 in the morning for a conversation with him and for lots more. We usually got lots of things going. You're tuned again, 96.3 FM and www.microradio.net/FRSC is our address on the web if you are checking us out from a distance. Again, any more information you would like, we can give you at 423-4833, us Huffsters, that is. Huff also meets every Wednesday at Baker's Square, 1107 Ocean. That's a civil rights organization concerned with the rights of homeless people, preservation of public spaces, and the decriminalization of homelessness, so that people who are homeless do not suffer criminal penalties for being so. And you can join us at 8:30 in the morning at 1107 Ocean Street every Wednesday morning. Or again, get more information by calling 423-HUFF. This is a recorded transmission, but leave a message, and we'll be happy to pick up on whatever thoughts you have on Sunday when there's another edition of this show. Tuesday was city council meeting, and one matter of some concern to a number of us were some so-called minor amendments to the camping ordinance, which were pushed by Kennedy, Premack, and Porter originally, about a month ago. Originally, they would have provided some conceivable elbow room for Camp Paradise's successor organization, the Santa Cruz Service Corps. Camp Paradise really disappeared in December when it was flooded out by the river after City Council refused to require the staff to return with alternate sites for the campground, the depot site, park sites. There was a Pogonip site suggested at one point.
other private property alternatives were proposed, and the city council declined to assist in this, though they were making mouthings as though they were. And a report was actually prepared as early as mid-November by the city manager's office, but it didn't get back to city council until, I think it was the first council meeting in February. Not that it made a lot of point, except that had it gotten back, it would have put the council on the spot to do something. And we're in a situation, I want to remind new listeners, that in Santa Cruz there are 1,000 to 2,000 homeless people, not the county, but the city, just the city alone, 1,000 to 2,000 homeless people, and a total of 160 floor spaces, space for 160 people on the floors of the Armory and the ISSP Emergency Shelter Church Program every night. That's the maximum. So that means that 90% of homeless people sleep illegally and face $54 fines under the city's sleeping ban, its blanket ban, which both of which criminalize either sleeping or covering up with a blanket after 11 o'clock at night until 8:30 in the morning on any, repeat, any public property in Santa Cruz, or the broader camping ordinance, which means if they protect themselves, God help us, with a tent, or dare to use a fire and to warm themselves or to cook food anytime, that is punishable, again, by a $54 fine. Now, Camp Paradise, as many of you know, was a collection of people who got together and said, we need to, for security among ourselves, because there are people like Trollbusters who delight in beating up homeless people, there are illnesses and accidents that happen when you're separated from other people, you don't have community ties, so it's much safer to have a campsite with a number of people. A case in point, the Coral Street Open Air Shelter, or the Back 40, which in 1995, from the summer on, was allowed to have tents set up. They lost no people through death, but after they were dispersed by Rotkin Kennedy and Daryl Darling, the deaths began one after another in pretty quick succession in the months ahead. An activist, Dan Hopkins, who led an eight-month protest at City Hall some months later in 1996, that lasted for 8 months, held these council members accountable as murderers, talking about Rotkin and Kennedy at the time. So it is important for there to be a community in which homeless people have some resources. Now you might say, well, there's some wonderful homeless services. That's what former Councilmember Rotkin always says. There are some homeless services. They are far from wonderful. I'm glad that what little services we have are there. But they don't include any kind of campground, any kind of car park, any kind of place where people can have their own self-sustaining community or self-protecting community, until Camp Paradise came along. Now, Camp Paradise was a campground that allowed for that. Not only that, they were clean and sober. They helped out the local community. They were supported by local folks. They did community projects, so they put the council in an embarrassing position. What were they going to do, run in and run them all off and risk some sort of court rebuke? Because under the necessity defense, these people have to sleep somewhere illegally. Many of them were born here. Many of the homeless people, and in fact, one-third are actually estimated to have been born here. Another third have been here for a long period of time. If you look at the United Way Needs Assessment Project of 2000 that was done. It's on the web for those who are interested. So the city council was embarrassed, and Camp Paradise embarrassed them, and they finessed it for a while. They actually gave them tickets, and the local judge pleased the city council by striking down the necessity defense, but that's on appeal, and the necessity defense has been upheld in other places, that defense being that if you are breaking a camping law, it may be that you have the right to do so because the need to survive, to sleep, is more important than adhering to the letter of a city code. And this, in fact, is what was found in Santa Barbara recently by an appellate court above the lowest level court. And so Santa Barbara now has to deal with the necessity defense, and hopefully Santa Cruz will too when this case reaches the appellate level, if the courts will ever get the transcripts to the defendants. So far they have been claiming that their machines are broken, so they can't make copies of the requisite tapes. This has been going on for 2 months, mind you. Actually 3 months since November. We're almost into March now. Anyway, the issue at City Council last Tuesday night had to do with changes in the camping ordinance. And again, there were some minor kind of cosmetic changes that dealt with not the real needs of Camp Paradise, which would have been a place where they can stay and where other homeless people can stay, real campsites, real car parks, or just allowing people to find their own property and their own opportunities, and while they're doing to allow a decriminalization to happen, as task forces funded by the city, such as the $10,000 Homeless Issues Task Force as recommended, such as the task force to examine the camping ordinance found was needed. None of these things, of course, are being even considered by the City Council. Instead, a token proposal by Scott Kennedy, which would allow 2 weeks in one of three city parks for a group of 15 people, was proposed and passed last night. Now, I suppose you might say that's a foot in the door, that's the baby step, that's a little incremental deal. Originally, Santa Cruz Service Corps activist Tom Shaver was outraged when he heard of this, saying it was a completely ineffectual proposal, but he changed his tune, apparently. Maybe he feels he's got some chance of getting it modified, or somehow feels that the baby step approach is going to work. And the council unanimously passed this. Unfortunately, at the same time, they also passed a proposal which makes worse the situation for all people outside by imposing and making explicit a 3-day limit on business parking lots, all yards, and reemphasizing the 72 hours in a driveway proposal, which currently limits private property, private Good Samaritanism, where people who want, they can't use any public property to sleep on, so if they can get the permission of a private landowner to be there, now they're told they can only do so for 3 days in any calendar month. Well, council members Riley, Kennedy, Crone, Fitzmaurice, possibly Sugar, I think they all said that what they wanted to do was pass this as it was, but then they were going to come back and change it later. Why they were doing this, to pass it as it is, when in fact it was a misinterpretation, I've discussed this in the past, that there is no 3-day limit on anything except a driveway, and that was shown by the debate in 1999 on this camping ban ordinance amendment that I've watched very carefully in the tapes, the video and the audio tapes, which other activists agree with me on, which Ken Cole and Paul Brindell, Homeless Service Center Director, and CAB Shelter Project Director, respectively, believed to be the case, which chair of the Homeless Issues Task Force, Linda LeMaster, also agrees with. I mean, there's no real dispute about this. It's obvious that John Barisone, the city attorney, and or the city council screwed up in adding this sentence in the wrong place in the law. So instead of simply striking it out as they should have at the council meeting, they're saying, oh, well, we'll propose it a few weeks down the road. So for the next month, or two actually, for the next 2 months, it's going to be illegal for people to use backyards for more than 3 days. It's going to be illegal for people with the permission of a business owner to park in a business parking lot in a vehicle, you're only allowed to do that with 2 vehicles per business parking lot, for more than 3 days. Now presumably, or hopefully, the police will, quote, overlook and not enforce this bullshit. But the fact of the matter is, what we have is a city council which doesn't know how to strike two sentences out. And they're somehow afraid they're going to be criticized by bigots in the community, who are one of whom made himself heard at the city council, a man who's otherwise a nice guy, but I'm afraid I've got to call him bigoted in his views on this matter, Don Hubbard of the Harvey West Area Association, who spoke at city council on Tuesday night, essentially opposing the Camp Paradise pittance, the pittance for the Santa Cruz Service Corps, that said, if you meet all these requirements, CEQA, California Environmental Quality Act, if you huge liability bond, security, and there's five other requirements, then we will let you camp in a park for 15 days, for 14 days for a group of no more than 15 people, if Jim Lang, the Parks and Rec czar, okays it. Highly unlikely that almost any group is going to get that, although I guess they might let one token group through. Anyway, it was... for me, it was a discouraging evening, though. A lot of activists, I guess, took some encouragement in the comments that the council made, saying that in a couple weeks they would come back and strike the offending 3-day sentences, which are inappropriately limiting backyards, side yards, front yards, and business parking lots from private Good Samaritanism for people who need to camp there. But the fact is that, of course, even with this situation, which we've actually had for 3 years, the police have never given a ticket for any of these things, because the law has always been properly thought to not include those areas. It was just a new interpretation by City Attorney John Barisone that now puts it in a different position. It's now been concrete, set down in concrete in law by the ordinance passed by City Council on Tuesday night, which makes it, of course, very bad, unless these council members come back and complete their promise, which Christopher Crone, the mayor, asked Barisoni, the city attorney, to look into changing the, providing wording that will strike these sentences, that there's a three-day limit on these two other areas, yards and business parking lots. But for, I encourage people to call Crone at 420-5023, again, Christopher Crone, the mayor, 420-5023, and tell him, you know, get off your butt and get, let's make sure this comes back to the next city council meeting with those provisions struck. Of course, that just brings us back to the same horrible situation we have had for the last 3 years, which means it's criminal to sleep at night if you are one of the 90% of the homeless who have no shelter. It's criminal at any time to set up a campground or set up a any kind of protective covering, even against the rain. It's so. In other words, we are not only at zero, we're in the negatives here. And what's really needed, of course, is for community members to act on this issue. So when you talk to Crone about, you know, fulfilling his commitment to return things to the status quo, you might also mention at 420-5023, tell him he needs to really take action on what he's promised to do when he got into office, which is to end the sleeping ban sections of the camping ordinance, to end the blanket ban sections of the camping ordinance. The laws that criminalize the act of sleeping and covering up with a blanket, which is just sheer, straight, unvarnished human rights violations. No question about it. I mean, you can criminalize, you can regulate camping. You shouldn't be able to criminalize it. You should be able to regulate it. But you can't criminalize sleeping or covering up with a blanket. And police officers who wrote that into the code back in 1978 as a convenience for them should not be the people whose advice we follow in these matters. And just can't be the people whose advice we follow. Yet, of course, City Council trembles before Chief Belcher and the nervous Nellies, and I'm afraid the bigoted folks in the various residential associations. And actually, I called into the Talkabout show recently, this election coming up with Marty Wormhout versus Schmidt and Premack for supervisor. It's kind of an interesting situation. I don't know all the ins and outs of the election, but I know that Michael Schmidt, for 2 years, has been taking the risk of speaking up for the rights of homeless people in front of business people with whom he risks losing a lot of credibility and support by doing this, and he has actually won them over. He got them to approve safe sleeping spaces and then safe sleeping zones in 2000, and then when the city council ran away from that after Byers defected, council member Byers, and they refused to, they passed it in the first reading but defeated it at the second reading, safe sleeping zones in the industrial areas for homeless people. Schmidt did not run. He set up a homeless working group, and he continued to work by including homeless people and activists who interviewed every single candidate for the city council elections of 2000, and has continued to press at the county level for safe places for homeless people to sleep, such as the Emmeline Street parking lot or the county governmental structure down at the at Ocean Street at the courthouse. And of course, Supervisor Wormhout wouldn't hear of such a thing, just as she wouldn't hear of the sleeping ban in the city being overturned. She has pressured every council member that she can, as far as I know, since she got into office, to not to allow this basic human rights reform. Yet she poses as a progressive. It is a real disgrace. She's the woman who had Sandra Loringer arrested for serving homeless people free food back in 1989. She will claim, of course, it was the county that did this, but it was her city police who did this with no objection from her. She did, in fact, personally have activist Fran Rizzo arrested on the coldest night of the year, in February of 1989, for going to her doorstep and trying to get additional blankets for the then even more inadequate Interfaith Satellite Shelter Program for homeless people shivering in that program. Fran Rizzo curled up on her doorstep, and Wormhout had her arrested by the police, with no additional blankets, of course, being given to homeless people in the armory. I don't think they had the armory open that year. Rundell refused to open it at that time. So, Schmidt, not Wormhout, for supervisor, and certainly not Premack, because Premack has been blaming the sleeping ban for years on activists. He's been saying the reason we have a sleeping ban is because all those activists are too loud and noisy. If only they just shut up, then the city would all die away of its own accord. Sort of a similar argument that if only those uppity blacks hadn't raised their voices in the South, those good white Southerners would have changed the segregation laws. You know, Premack maybe shrewd and outspoken on some issues, and he is. I've liked what he's done around the Dolphin Lee issue. He has spoken up courageously on some issues, but on homeless issues he is so horrible, even though he spoke out initially for Camp Paradise, then backtracked, then flip-flopped again, and supported this latest token proposal to have them have access to three parks for a very limited period of time if they do work, if they get the permission of Jim Lang, if they meet 8 requirements, that he cannot be considered a credible alternative to someone like Schmidt if you're considering things from the perspective of civil rights for the homeless. Why should you consider things from that perspective? It's always good to look at how politicians address the most disadvantaged people in the society. It's true, it's only one part of the picture, but it's a very important part of the picture. And when you vote on the second, please consider it. Wormhout and Premack are outspending Schmidt enormously, but nonetheless, they have not been taking the time to go around from door to door and knock and talk to citizens the way Schmidt has. They don't meet regularly with homeless activists. In fact, Premack has refused to return a phone call to me for a year and a half. He is inaccessible, he is arrogant, and he is simply, however intelligent he is, and he is a very intelligent person, I think he lacks the willingness to engage in dialogue with ordinary people. That's the problem. The problem with Wormhout is she's had too much power for far too long. I mean, incumbents should generally be thrown out, but she's done too little, and she has maintained this rigid, we don't want to get controversial issues involved, ranging from medical marijuana, where she's declined to support the important Sonoma proposal that allows for, takes away discretion from the sheriffs and essentially allows cannabis patients to grow their own up to a certain amount, not just a certain number of plants, but a certain amount of marijuana. That's worked well in the Sonoma County, though it's taken away the power of renegade and out of control police officers and deputies to just sort of crack down where they want. This is something that Mark Tracy apparently doesn't like, and so Wormhout has collapsed and is surrendering to Tracy on this issue. That's been my understanding of it. And Schmidt, on the other hand, says he would support the Sonoma County guidelines. So, I mean, I'm seeing better issues. On rent control, Schmidt is willing to consider serious rent stabilization. Have heard nothing from Wormhout on that subject. Very important subject countywide. We get this big brouhaha over Proposition L, which has already been, you know, essentially defeated by the courts today. There was a ruling actually. This is Wednesday. I'm making this tape for a Thursday broadcast. But there was a ruling that the measure will be dumped within 6 months, regardless of what the voters do. That's my understanding of it. So this is all a big. This is all one of these progressive hoaxes that you hear so much about. They dredge up the stuff about the social services for the poor, how they're all concerned about that all these services are going to be cut off. What's really going to be cut off, or what should be cut off, are the huge salaries for people like Susan Mariello and these other county planners and bureaucrats who need to be cut back big time, because they aren't providing significant services, because we have these people who have endlessly been in office at the city and county level that need to be removed. So anyway, I personally am encouraging you to vote for Schmidt. Supervisor, I don't know whether no or yes on L. I mean, I'm thinking, I suppose another 6 months of L gives them the discretionary funding to continue with social services at the levels they do. But they could still continue if they're willing to cut salaries, as they should, where you have many people over $100,000 and all kinds of, seems like to me, excess stuff, excess fat at that level. If I'm sounding like a Republican, so be it. I wish I had more dialogue to give you on the debate at City Council that happened on Tuesday night around the camping ban and other things. One thing that happened in City Council I may have mentioned was Michael Tomasi got thrown out. I think I already did mention that, showing Christopher Crone has no respect for the Brown Act, the right of people to participate, no respect for letting people know with a warning what exactly he's going to kick people out for. What is the forbidden words that he's not allowing? I mean, Fitzmaurice didn't allow flunky and fascist. What is it that Tomasi said? Was it he spoke with too much hostility about Sergeant Baker? Or did he speak too loudly at the mic? We didn't hear. We didn't know. He just was ordered to leave. Crone just, you know, switched into fascist mode. It's too bad that happened. We'd also hear more from this council meeting if I were allowed to actually tape record, as I've historically been allowed to do, from the mic, where I put a small handheld tape recorder there and leave it there. Fitzmaurice barred that practice, and Crone has been following this restriction on the media, as well as media has been restricted from videotaping from behind the area behind the podium where videotapers have normally been videotaping. I'm thinking specifically of Club Crew's videotaper Becky Johnson, who has done some great work in terms of getting the expressions on people's faces, on getting everything that happens. And videotape people from community television are currently allowed to do the videotaping there, but she is barred from being there. And similarly, I am not allowed to use a tape recorder, and so I'm reduced to trying to use the equipment that they provide, which supposedly allows direct access through the speaker system. Well, it didn't work when I used it. Part of that is because I have these handheld tape recorders that are pretty low quality stuff, and they need to be close to the mics where people are speaking. But that's how it goes. Not all of us has the high-tech equipment, and to discriminate against those who don't is just wrong and denies the public information that they need, because some people get their information about city council meetings, strangely enough, from these sessions. You're tuned to Free Radio Santa Cruz, 96.3 FM. I am Bathrop's peer, Robert Norris. This is Bathrop's peer's Broadsides, the recorded version. I will be back with you in person on Sunday, 10 o'clock in the morning, and Mel Mason will be my guest shortly thereafter, the seaside activist who's trying to get some real controls on the police department. Your name, sir?
Ken Lane.
And where are you from?
I'm from Modesto. I work with the Coalition on Homelessness in Stanislaus County.
And what is this treasonous group, and what are you trying to do?
Overthrow the local government.
And what kind of Soviet commie-style notions do you have to set up in place of our patriots?
Everything we've learned from you.
Thank you. So what are the major problems in terms of how homeless people are treated in Modesto, as if I didn't know?
Well, they're treated like they don't exist. The Constitution of the United States doesn't exist for the homeless people. The Bill of Rights doesn't exist for the homeless people. The phrase life, liberty, and pursuit of happiness does not exist for the homeless people in Modesto.
Surely the police are treating the homeless in a gentle and compassionate fashion.
Okay, if you say so.
Do you have a sleeping ban in Modesto?
There is a camping ban. It's a city ordinance. No camping allowed within city limits.
Do you sleep in your vehicle?
No.
And what kind of, you have SROs in Modesto?
None whatsoever. The only two buildings that we had that could have been used for SROs were knocked down for development for city offices.
So homeless people, perhaps they're digging caves, kind of using the Taliban approach?
Actually, you find most of them right down there on the creek beds and riverbanks.
And what happens there?
Not a whole lot. They get run out fairly often. About once every month, maybe.
How does the local media treat the situation?
They twist things around to where the media looks good. The homeless people pretty much do without.
And you're organizing. How effective has your organizing been, and what are you trying to do in Modesto?
Well, lately what we've been doing is meeting with the chief of police, and actually, believe it or not, he's been fairly compassionate, and he started giving us word warning up front about the police sweep, so we can go down and warn the people, let them get their stuff out.
Does he give them a place to move to?
No. What happens a lot of times is they move out into the county areas and incorporated areas, and the sheriff comes along and runs them back into the city, and then the city comes along and moves them back out into the county.
Good exercise, right?
Yeah, I keep them moving anyway.
So what about local homeless folks? Are they standing up for themselves? Are they generally trying to keep low?
They're keeping low, keeping a real low profile. They're not standing up for themselves as much as we'd like for them to.
What kind of support are you looking for from, well, the Coalition on Homelessness, the broader, the Santa Cruz community? What would you like?
Well, just the moral support is really nice. It's nice to know that we're not fighting this battle alone.
How about a goose chase that spends a year developing a meaningless form and wastes tens of thousands of dollars of grant money on endless meetings?
Let me guess, C-Crop?
C-Crap is what I call it.
Yeah, okay, I know what you're talking about.
So what kind of support are you looking for? We're actually, this is a little in-joke, all you radio listeners out there, California homeless, what is it called? What was C-CROP a
California
homeless civil rights organizing
right,
project? I remember that group, yes.
We need legal support. we need lawyers. We need people to show us the way around courtrooms and to plead our case for us and to just to show us basically what to do.
Well, here's a legal eagle. She can help you out.
So, I just want to make sure you have press packets.
Thank you, Barbara. And that's about it for Bathrop Spears Broadsides, the recorded edition of February 28th, 2002. Thanks for hanging in there. Sorry we had no phone calls this time, but we will on Sunday, and that's 3.5 hours of fun and games, and pretty serious stuff, too. Inviting you to join in there. In the meantime, feel free to leave a message at 423-4833. I'll get back to you if and when I can. Keep your eyes open on the street. Keep your eyes front, because it's your eyes and your voice that's going to make the difference. Not the social service providers, not the city council, not the police force, not the merchants. It's you and your neighbors and those that you know and care about standing up together that will make the difference.